Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. On today's program, we'll hear a debate between the two candidates for the office of Mayor of Omaha, former Mayor Hal Dobb, and City Councilman Jim Suttle. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, April 16, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The debate is co-sponsored by the Omaha Press Club and the League of Women Voters. The opinions expressed are those of the candidates and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Gary Kerr, the president of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Each of the candidates will have 1.5 minutes to respond to questions prepared by a committee of the Press Club and the League of Women Voters. The responses will be timed. The candidates have not seen the questions in advance. Follow-up questions by me will be permitted, and after both candidates have answered a question, there will be an opportunity for back-and-forth comments by the candidates before we move on to a new question. Each of the candidates will get a 2-minute closing statement, so please no applause during the debate. You can do that right now. Hal Dobb and Jim Suttle, please come forward, and we will get underway. Questions, and we're going to begin with Jim Suttle. Nationwide, and especially in Omaha, women are not well represented on boards and commissions and other appointed positions. In 2006, women made up just 25% of such positions in Omaha. 33% of those boards and commissions had no women at all. As mayor, naming people to many of those positions will be your responsibility. How are you going to address that situation? Jim Suttle?
Well, I appreciate that question. It's a good question and one that needs to be given very serious attention. I have already committed publicly that my administration, my appointments to the staff, to the departments, to the boards and commissions, will reflect the diversity of this community. And I stand on that, and we will make it happen.
Hal Dobb?
It was my privilege to, when mayor, make a very strong commitment to diversity, that if you look into our city government, we should all as citizens see it reflected. And so for minority representation and for women representation, we strive to be sure that you could see that balance. There are a couple of reasons for that balance. One is because there's more transparency and therefore more trust in government. But the other reason is this is a huge resource for us. Women with their talent can be recruited and given an opportunity to grow with those experiences as well. And then, in my view, equip themselves to become candidates for public office. And this is very important to understand that given a chance to be on boards and commissions in our community, and there are 50-some boards and commissions that a mayor is privileged to have the opportunity to find good people and appoint them, from the plumbing board to the library board. And so it's important to be sure that not only in the cabinet, but on the boards and commissions of our city, that we see our city reflected and very solid, competent, talented representation in a recruiting effort to be sure women are a very big part of my administration.
Hal Dobb, another diversity type question.
Can we do some additional comment to that?
Go ahead. Yeah, Jim.
I want to give you, I firmly believe in leading by example, and you will see me do that continuously in the mayor's office. I believe you should practice what you preach. Let me share with you something from my business experience. When I went back to HDR in January of 1988, and we began to really grow the company, I began to see something in different parts of the country that we as a company were not reflecting in our leadership and in our work complement what our clients were. So we needed to look much like the environment. Boston's an interesting place because I saw there the importance of having women leadership, and I actually hired and had as an office manager a female who was not an engineer. But the client base there, most of the agencies that were our clients had women leaders, directors at the top. And we as an organization to succeed in Boston, and we did in a short period of time, needed to reflect that. Same is true as I went to Miami, as we looked at the Cuban population, or the San Antonio with the Hispanic population. I authored and put together what was called at the time Workforce 2000 for HDR. And it was built on this observation. It was a successful plan, and it's in place still today at HDR. That's an example of leading by example and what I bring to the mayor's office with my business and engineering experience.
Hal, you want to expound?
Just that there are two great sources that I will use and depend upon in recruiting talented women to work in city government. One is in the Women's Fund, and they're great talent outreach. And you can see my comments in the next edition, which emphasize this very question and point. And secondly, ICANN, which every 2 years works to energize women all across our city to think about other opportunities and broadening their horizons. And so those are two places I will look for advice to be sure we have a very, very solid representation of talented women who will help on the team move our city forward.
Hal, another diversity kind of question. Unemployment for African Americans in Omaha is 10.5%, while it is only 3.1% for the Omaha Caucasian population. Median household income, $31,969 for African Americans in Omaha versus $50,622 for the Caucasian population in our city. As mayor of the city, what efforts would you make, what can you make to improve those statistics?
Boy, how much time do we have? It is a very, very complex issue, and the time I have won't pay proper respect to this, I think, critical issue for our city. It's not only just the statistics, Gary, that you referenced. It's the poverty rate among young black children. It's the dropout rate from high school among African Americans at some 70% plus. Latinos over 60%. The total dropout rate's way too high. If it's not social, moral, and ethical, then it really boils down to a workforce development issue. You've got 4,000 people in a span of 10 years in that category that won't be productive, viable in the workforce for our city going forward. So in partnership with the schools, in partnership with Omaha Healthy Partnership, Community Partnership, in partnership with Bright Futures, many of the faith-based, non-profit, and non-governmental organizations, we must have an intervention and prevention and training focus in our city that we've never, ever masked and coordinated before. And as mayor of the city, I will do all I can to participate in that, as well as to be sure that in minority hiring, we have very open doors and look for an opportunity to be sure that the city government leads the way in emphasizing hiring minorities and asking businesses then to do likewise.
Jim Suttle, same question.
As a business person, as an engineer, I have made a commitment based upon my analysis of the situation, that we need to bring 1,000 industrial jobs, manufacturing jobs, green industry jobs, and place those facilities as close as we can to the core areas of our city where we have the highest unemployment. That means we have to do it in the eastern part of the city, and it has to be within 5 to 7 minutes of North Omaha and South Omaha. That's my pledge as mayor, and I will bring the decisive action to make that happen.
If you go to my website, haldobb.com, you will see a very specific set of plans for economic development. It's a 10-year plan. There are 15 specific points. One is to reestablish in the office of mayor a director of economic development that will better coordinate our efforts and particularly focus, Gary, on minority enterprise, minority small business, minority hiring, and to create 4 industrial tracks, one in each quadrant of the city, so that we can provide the plumbing and the parking and the ready-to-build, ready-to-hook-up and employ kinds of spaces that you need. And so it's education that has to come first, and then the space that you have to attract in the River Corridor, particularly North and South Omaha. And I have 2 good examples of that from my track record. One is, looking right out that window, you will see the North Omaha Business Park that wasn't there until I had the privilege of being mayor. Now, hundreds of people go to work there every day in every kind of job you can imagine.
taxes are being paid on the property there, and the people working there are paying their taxes and helping their families achieve their dreams and hopes and aspirations. Go to the South Omaha Stockyards and look at a blighted piece of property that's been put back on the tax rolls with businesses and nearly 1,000 people going to work there every day. So I know how to do these things. I've had the track record and the experience and the very detailed plans to get that job done.
Jim Sottle, you can respond if you want.
It's important that we frame the question. That's what I'm good at as an engineer, and asking a lot of questions so we get good problem definition. Let me say to you what I heard a major business leader in this community say three times. I hope I don't hear it tonight at their event at the Quest Center. We have an unemployment problem in this city of 4%. Therefore, 96% of the people are working. Therefore, we don't have a problem. I've always learned that you take the worst-case scenario. So let me rephrase that the way that I see the statistics and the degree of the problem. On the north side of our community, it has actually grown closer to 30% unemployment. Therefore, we have 70% of the people working. Therefore, we have a problem. It's all in how you make the statement so you can begin to identify the correct outcomes to solve the dilemma. The outcome is we need 1,000 jobs in manufacturing and industry, and we need it in the River Corridor, and we need it close to where we have this 30% unemployment. We need a program to assimilate the unemployed person by person into successful careers. Our current system looks at statistics. An unemployed person is a statistic and has to respond in a statistical way in order to fit into the workforce development program. We need to change that and get back to people. That's what I'm about, people.
You know,
I think we got to move on.
I'll save what I was going to say. Well, just,
all right.
It's really, I don't know if it's ironic or if it's, it's interesting anyway. Jim's an engineer and I'm a lawyer. Wouldn't you think that an engineer would have a specific plan and a lawyer would not? That's all I want to say.
All right.
Well, I'm making a call for decisive action. You can call things plans. You can put 14 points on your website. My process is very interactive. There's room for your thoughts, your ideas, as we go from today's problem to tomorrow's solution. Decisive action. That's what I bring. That's what I've delivered for 40 years. I'm proud of being an engineer, not an attorney. I'm proud of being a business person with 27 years. I'm proud of not being a professional politician.
Jim Sottle, new question for you. There's so much talk these days about improving the environment, the greening of just about everything imaginable. Name three things you would do to promote the greening of Omaha.
Well, my grandson, when he was 5 years old, wanted me to put chia powder on my head and become a green toupee. So, well, as we talk about the environment, we have to lead by example. The city needs to be the leader. And the things that I see, first of all, is how do we take the environmental overlay that was first put together some 25 years ago in Ponca Hills. It's dated. I've been pushing to get it modernized. But now we need to take it to the whole metropolitan area and make sure we are having standards put in place for environmental overview. I think the second thing is that we need to look at energy, and we need to look at how we can use biodiesel, how we can do things. I have the fleet of diesel trucks at City, but how do we take used vegetable oil from the restaurants and process it and begin to burn it? I did these types of things when I was public works director with our treatment plants with methane gas and a lot of other very exciting subjects at lunch. So I've been there and done that to generate and things. But the biggest and the final thing is resource recovery, rethinking everything we're doing with our waste processing for the whole metropolitan area. But the city has to lead first, so that we are rethinking how we collect it, what we save, from the food scraps to the oils to the paper trash to the cans, the metals.
Held out.
There are five things that you will find on the issue your question, if you go to my website at haldobb.com, you will see very specific plans. I think the voters are owed where we are and what plans we have so that they can make up their mind and not just to stick your finger up in the air and see which way the wind is blowing. So I owe you that before you decide for whom you will vote. So we're going to do the following things. We're going to develop green certified LEED standards for construction in our building permit process in our city. We're going to look at smart growth and compact growth and infill and not look to 330th and Proud Road for the great transportation and costs and commute time problems that creates to use in our zoning and our overlays more compact construction and use the space we've got. We must address the combined sewer overflow problem. Very critical. It starts with a plan that needs to be modified by the federal government, and I'll work to get that done to lower the costs per month to each of our property owners. And then we're going to work hard on buses to make sure that we have more transportation with natural gas buses, smaller ones, more routes, and make sure that we deal with a much improved waste management pickup process, including glass.
Hal Dobb, new question. Let's talk about crime, and I'll tell you, it was with some trepidation that I began this line of questioning because you guys have talked about this so much, but it seems to be uppermost in the minds of Omaha residents. We have several questions dealing with this issue, and you have both talked about your solutions. But again, what would you do to address the overall problem?
I've proposed a 7-point, very comprehensive, specific, detailed plan. After careful study and consultation, not only from listening to more than 100 neighborhood associations, more than 100 faith-based, not-for-profit, and non-governmental organizational leadership structures, from listening to government, business, and labor in a very, very concerted effort to address what is the number one duty of municipal government, which is to provide for a very prompt, efficient, responsive public service, that's police, fire, and rescue services, but safe streets and manageable streets and traffic, and there are a lot of things that go into the public safety issue. You've got the potential for natural disasters and weapons of mass destruction and chemical, biological storms and tornadoes. There's a whole lot of things that go into managing this very big picture of this paramount duty of public safety. So I proposed three specific new ideas, to get out our gang problem and to address the number of police officers we have on the street, because presence equals deterrence. And on the other side of that, we'll just keep locking up people if we don't do the intervention and prevention work we need to do to make sure that we get after the problems of nutrition and mental and physical well-being and homework help and after-school and truancy. All those things are critical, and a massive effort needs to be made to address that other side, the more important side of law enforcement and crime eradication in our city.
Jim Suttle.
I said it before, and I'll say it again today, that we will never get on top of the crime, the gun violence, and the gangs in this city unless we as a people are ready to address the unemployment problem, and particularly on the north side. And it was reflected in the story last night of the young man in the orange suit on television saying, "I don't belong here. I didn't mean to do this. I didn't have a job. I needed money." That said it all, that story. So my opponent wants to spend more and more time and just focus on one piece of the jigsaw puzzle. That is the law enforcement. That is already in place. Much of the points that he already is talking about have been in place now for the 10-plus years that we've had Operation Safe Neighborhoods. What we've got to do, and this is the action that I'm talking about, the decisive action, is to bring the other two pieces of the jigsaw puzzle to the table. The educational component, so we can set goals to drive truancy and dropout rates towards zero. The jobs component, so we can work on 1,000 jobs in manufacturing and bring that into the eastern part of the city. Those three pieces of the puzzle can now fit into a total solution to the problem.
Hal, do you want to pick up on
that? Well, I'm trying to figure out how RICOizing state law is something we're already doing, how a drop program to bring retired police officers back into our policing function is something old that we're already doing. I'm trying to figure out how designating a deputy chief to be in charge of getting rid of the gangs in this city, with 102 gangs and 3,000 identified known gang leaders, to focus as a management tool, not a new layer of government, not more spending, but to put focus on the problem I fail to see how those things are things that we're already doing. So I would submit to you in an objective comparison that I've offered new ideas after carefully listening to the director of the FBI program in Nebraska, meeting with the U.S. attorney, who understands all these things much better than I do, to listen to them for the good ideas that we have to put in place to get a handle on these programs. Zero tolerance for graffiti, taking care of the little things, adopting a community proactive policing program that gets tough on the crime but also has the heart and the compassion to understand what we need to do on the other side of the equation to give balance to how we get a safer city and have safer neighborhoods. And don't forget the wonderful people we rely upon in our neighborhood associations, in our neighborhood watches, in our citizen patrols. So much of our public safety depends upon the alertness of our citizens, and so we want to involve all of our citizens in helping achieve a safer city, and that would be my intention, again, if I get the privilege of being your mayor.
Jim, you can have another shot at this if you would like.
Well, let's put the facts on the table as they're reported over and over again in the World Herald and other media. The fact is that my opponent, when he was at City Hall as mayor, disbanded the gang unit. I want to disband gangs. There's a big difference. And thanks to Mayor Fahey, that gang unit and program was put back in place and back in action. It's, again, a focus on the bigger picture, as I said. There's a lot to this dynamic problem, but it's very clear. We will never get on top of the crime and the gun violence in the gangs unless we as a community address the unemployment. And with unemployment comes education. Those two pieces, missing pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, is what I will bring to the table and champion as mayor as part of the decisive action that I will put in place.
Hal, real quick
We made the function of gang management the duty of every police officer. We improved the undercover operations dramatically. The murder rate from the day I was sworn in till the day I left office dropped 24%. It's up 76% since I left office and 34% in the last 4 years since my opponent has been on the city council.
Jim Suttle, we're going to continue along this line of questioning, and this was mentioned briefly, but what about the number of police officers? You know, it seems like we are never at authorized strength, which can reduce response time to everything from auto accidents to assaults. I mean, how important is it to get to authorized strength or beyond?
Well, what you're bringing up and what my opponent has said just a few minutes ago is managing things by statistics. I don't manage things by statistics. I manage things by results. I look at what we need to have happen and then figure out how we get the process in place. So let me just ask a hypothetical question here. If each person in this room had five more police officers at your personal disposal when you leave this room, where would you place them?
Okay, Hal?
I don't think he's done yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I really want him to finish, so please let him finish here.
They hadn't responded yet. I'm sorry, Jim.
Well, I want them to think about this because every time I ask it, I get silence. You see, we can put more and more officers here, there, and everywhere. It's back to the jigsaw puzzle. It's back to decisive action. The law enforcement place is in place with professionals that are intermingled between the federal, the state, the local jurisdictions, and it's there. What we don't have is the change in society problems that are impacting greatly the tremendous increase in truancy and dropout and joblessness. We've got to bring those pieces of the jigsaw to the table and fit it all together to make it work.
Held up. New question.
To answer it, right?
You bet you do.
Yeah. Federal law requires that we have two police officers for every 1,000 of our population. And we are 110 officers short of that standard. The city council's budgeted for 840 police officers. The city council's seen property tax revenues increase in the last 8 years 43%. So for 110 officers short on the street today, prevention equals deterrence. It means a full number of gang unit members, a full number of Bunko Squad members, a full detailed shift for neighborhood patrolling, not five or six short every time a shift goes out, which jacks up the overtime that then goes into the pensions that haven't been managed that costs us the grief on terms of the big debt we have that's unpaid for there. So it's a real conundrum that needs to be looked at. What happened to the money that was budgeted for those 840 officers, and there's only 740 of them? Do we spend it all on overtime? So this is a real good question that's been asked, and it's real simple. Part of the equation is prevention. It comes from deterrence and from response to traffic accidents and all those things that people depend upon, and not just argue that there's a problem here, that statistics are not really telling us what's really at stake so we can get by with where we are. We're going to get in big trouble if we don't get this problem fixed, and I've given a specific process by which we bring drops back and laterals to get the manning level back up to speed and quit paying all this overtime.
All right, very quickly, Jim.
Once again, we're hearing a major difference between the two of us, managing statistics, managing results. Let me share something with you. In the newspaper a couple months ago was an extensive article with quotes from the police chief about how we fit the norm. We fit the norm in this stat and that stat when it comes to our crime records. Ladies and gentlemen, we fired a football coach in this state because he was the norm. We have a goal in this state of being number one in football in a national championship. So why are we content to be average when it comes to our crime stats and the results? What we need to do here is set a different outcome, and that is that we're going to have the shootings down towards zero. We're going to have the break-ins down towards zero. We need to focus on where we want the results to be, then fill in with the officers, the tools, whatever they might be, to get the job done. That's the difference between the two candidates standing in front of you today.
Let's move on to a new question. And Hal, this is for you. And I know you talked about this the other night, and we're going to revisit it. The police auditor position. Should there once again be a police auditor to take a look at citizens' complaints about how they were treated by police?
I am fully committed within the first 90 days of my hoped-for administration to resolve the 8-year impasse that's existed on the public auditor. I hired Tristan Bond when I was mayor. She should have had the resources and the tools necessary to become effective in that role. Didn't happen. Now, that's at least the history of the matter. I favor accountability, and the way you establish accountability and trust is to involve citizens in the process. I favor an audit role that is independent, that lets any citizen file a complaint against any city employee and have that, by ordinance, promptly redressed and managed and the public informed of the outcome. And I'll bring all the stakeholders together right away, first thing, to be sure that we frame the current ordinance, or amend it, or change it as we may debate the process, to be sure that we have that audit function for all citizens back in place, for not only the police department, but for every other altercation or situation that develops where there's been rudeness or improper conduct or treatment by a city employee of a citizen taxpayer in our community.
Jim Suttle, auditor position.
For the 4 years I've been on the council, I've been one of two council members consistently supporting the auditor position. I will continue to do that. Decisive action. I will put it in place once I'm in office as your mayor. Now, it's interesting to hear my opponent here change his position, begin to talk favorably about this as he did the other evening. I couldn't figure out why until I heard him taking this to the entire city workforce, which is totally unnecessary. We already have procedures in place on dealing with rude conduct with our citizens if you are a member of Public Works Planning or whatever else. The difference is we have a key problem, a deep problem with our law enforcement uniform side, and those individuals have the power to arrest. That's the difference. Let's don't make the problem big and the solution watered down, because that's what this is about. This is a smokescreen. We need to keep it focused on what the objective is per the ordinance on the books, and that is public safety and opportunity for citizens who have a confrontation to have a place to go that's independent to seek restitution.
You know, the making of wise and workable public policy is a very difficult thing to do. It takes experience. My experience tells me that for 8 years, City Council couldn't get this problem fixed. that it is as political as much as anything else. And so I've given a lot of thought to this and listened to a lot of people, met with all the stakeholders. They agree there's a political impasse if we just try to continue to fight for the status quo, an authorization with no money and no person doing the job. So I've looked for a way to broaden the appeal of oversight and accountability. And think of the good ideas we're going to get. And think of the response we're going to get from all the city workers that now know that there's an audit and oversight function for all city workers to do their jobs and do them right. And have a standard of accountability for all city employees. Why just one part of the government? So I think it's a strengthening opportunity that we're giving to this. And a little bit of political savvy about how to bring people together and get it done. Build a broader base and a broader coalition for this function so we can quit talking about it and get her done.
New question. Jim Suttle, this is for you. And again, we're continuing along the same line. Well, let's talk about community policing for a minute. Everybody talks about it, but how often do you see police walking a beat, for example, through neighborhoods especially subject to crime? The idea, of course, is to develop trust in those neighborhoods that will hopefully deter crime. How do you define community policing? And should it play a bigger role in our community? Or, as some say, it's just so expensive we can't afford it?
Well, I'm a firm believer in partnerships. And what my eyes have seen as I've gone on my police ride-along runs, my personal experience in visiting neighborhoods across the city, I'm firmly in belief that we need a stronger partnership between the citizens and the law enforcement agency that we have in place, the police department. What do we do? How do we do that? We need to change some processes and procedures and begin to look at the problem differently. We have roughly 2-3% of the population that are causing the robberies and the violence and the other criminal acts. That means we have 97-98% of the citizens that are law-abiding, have all the values that you have. We need to engage that part of the population as the partner with law enforcement. I will figure that out as part of the decisive action working with law enforcement and the community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and the citizen patrols, etc., to figure out how to do that.
Hal Dodd?
I had the privilege of negotiating 3 police contracts, 3 fire contracts, and 2 police contracts. There is a substantial amount of micromanagement contained inside the ordinances that sort of predetermine the outcome in terms of assignments and who can do what and specialty pay and who can fly and who can walk and who's in the dog unit and all these things. And same thing's true in fire, and it's a very complex issue. But community policing to me is simply about getting the job done, of making sure the public has a trust and also feels like the work's getting done. And on the one hand, you can't be 110 officers short compared to a year and a half ago, and think that the city is more safe. So it is expensive. Public safety is the paramount duty. It is the key piece of what we have to do. And we can't shrink from that first and primary responsibility. And so programs like the lateral program, the drop program, bringing back officers to get us up to full strength so that we can have Patty the beat cop out of his car and walking, so we can have a relationship with neighborhood associations and crime watches and citizen patrols, so there's response when there's a burglary or an intrusion. And you don't just wait and wonder, where are they? Talk to any police officer you see and ask them if they're not shorthanded. And behind, when they sit in that cruiser car, they're already 10 calls behind. It's very difficult right now. So it's a matter of proper manning to begin with. And if we don't get that done and get it done right away, we're going to be in continually difficult times in terms of the rapidly rising crime rate.
Jim?
Let's again put some facts on the table per the World Herald. My opponent, during his watch, abandoned the community policing. Mayor Fahey brought it back. It needs to be brought back in a larger context than what we've seen to date, because the times are different with this economy in front of us and the threats and so forth. So what are we talking about? We're not talking about just per se cops walking the beat or this or that. We got to talk about a whole different thought process on how we're going to approach the law enforcement and begin to focus in on that 2%, 3% element that is causing the problem. Stopping every citizen because we have a broken taillight or we're doing this, we're looking at the minutiae when we need to be looking at the details. Decisive actions, that's what I'm talking about. The public and its law enforcement professionals together, focused on where, what, when, and why is going on with that 2 to 3% criminal element.
Al, quick response.
Jim, I haven't been in City Hall for the last 8 years, but you've been there for four. And I would think that you'd have a better defined idea about specifically what needs to be done. Call it what you want. I embrace the community proactive policing strategies that the World Herald has editorialized in favor of, which is to take care of the little things. Because if you don't take care of the taillight and the code violation, that leads to the burglary of the car, then the burglary of the house, and then somebody gets hurt. If you let the little things alone, don't have enough officers on the street to take care of accident reports and checking on intrusions, then people are emboldened to do more risky things and more dangerous things. So it's very clear, whether it's graffiti, zero tolerance, or whether it's more officers on the street, you got to do that in order to have a proper perspective for a safe city. And you won't have one if you ignore the problem.
Jim.
Let's take an example that happened to me recently, because I've had numerous examples of profiling. I walked the 24th Street visiting the barbershops and beauty salons one Saturday morning, and a young hairdresser said to me, "Mr. Suttle, on my way to work this morning, I was stopped twice by a Nebraska State Patrol officer, taken out of my car. I refused to have my baby taken out of the car into the cold air. But I was issued no tickets, but my car was searched twice. Twice going to work, twice within 15 minutes. Why?" We need to address that. That's not law enforcement. That's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. That's not community policing. Community policing should have been, that officer should have been doing what I was doing, see what's going on in the salons and in the stores, and establishing a rapport to know where the criminal element is and what we need to collectively do about it. The partnership should have been with that young lady. Now she's disenfranchised. I heard that story and others like it over and over again during my two walks of the area to the salons and the barbershops.
We got to move on. Hal Dobb, let's talk about the pension system for police and firefighters. You know, even if you eliminate spiking, well, I think just everybody agrees that that needs to be done. It's the right thing to do. The pension system is still pretty good for police and firefighters. Bottom line, should there be fundamental changes that would lower pension levels for police and firefighters to bring costs under control, costs that some believe threaten to bust the city financially?
9 years ago, I said to the leadership of the collective bargaining units in police and fire that early retirement at age 46 and full health care benefits for retirees without contribution, and using the high 2 or the high 1 and the high 3-5 calculation of excessive overtime, which is spiking for police and callback or comp for fire, and put that into the calculation of the average base pay upon which the 75% retirement pension would be paid at age 46, would not only break their pensions because they belong to them, but it would lead the city into very serious financial difficulty. I said no to those things, and if you look at the World Herald, which my opponent seems to believe a lot, it says that the pension plans were in balance until 2002, after I left office. So it seems to me that we have two problems. The market's one of them, but the other is the structural imbalance that's in the plan. You have to get rid of all the things we just talked about, or modify them and change them. And that has to be done by collective bargaining, has to be negotiated. But that's not enough, because it only affects those workers not yet retired. So you haven't filled the $500 million civilian police and fire debt that's on the books. And until we do that, we won't get the AAA bond rating back that the city council has lost. City councils tax and spend, mayors don't. Or get our cash reserve rebuilt to get that AAA bond rating back, which on the other side, with overtime and spiking, drives up our costs for bridges, parks, streets, roads, libraries, and equipment. So it's a real serious problem. Not only the sewers to be bonded and the stadium you can look out the window and see have to be bonded. So it's a real problem, and my idea will work.
Jim Suttle.
Decisive action. The dilemmas we have with our fire and police plan, our pension fund, are one, the spiking, and two, the rest of it is financial. As mayor, I will set a goal to have this resolved with the two unions within 6 months. I will use the technique I used as public works director in dealing with the unions at that time. It's very simple. It's an agenda sheet that has one item on it, not 60. One item that we resolved. I have committed to being at the table. The first time a mayor, a sitting mayor, will be at the table with the two presidents of the union. I do not want lawyers in the room. This is not about the legal side. This is about the numbers. I want an actuary at the end of the table running numbers. We have to deal with the federal changes in accounting standards. That's what drove this into a problem. The second thing, which is really more important than anything else, is the fact that all of us in this room lost anywhere from 20 to 30% of our retirement plan, and that's our dilemma here. How do we restore that? Third, we got to go into the details of the contracts, and I've remained open-minded on that until we go to the table. I will not negotiate on the front page of the World Herald as much as I love them. And we will get this resolved point by point. It's going to be some tough love. It'll be a tough situation, but I've done it before when I was Public Works Director. I'll do it here.
How many years were you Public Works Director?
You should know that.
No, I don't.
You should read the World Herald.
Just, I'm glued to it every day, Jim, let me tell you.
Six and a half years,
and you've been a counsel for it. So you've been in government 10 and a half years, and I've been in government 14 years, so I was trying to figure out why I'm a professional politician. But I was also trying to figure out that now numbers matter. So here's important to understand about all this. Yes, it has to be negotiated. But ladies and gentlemen, experience. I'm a pension lawyer. Numbers do count. I know how to do this. I've done it before. And this debt is $500 million. It's $28 million a year for 28 years. Where's the city of Omaha going to find that kind of money, free cash flow, after all the other bills are paid? This is serious. It's been left to happen. Cost us our AAA bond rating. It gets even more egregious. We have fewer officers and firefighters and rescue people on the street because of it, because they quit and took their money and left town. This isn't something just to say I'm going to wait and in the first 6 months I'm going to. You've got to have a plan. You've got to tell the voters what you're going to do in advance before you choose the next mayor, to know how capable and how in-depth they have studied and thought about this issue so that this problem has a process by which it can be solved. And the last point I want to make is simple. That supplementary give back that we're going to have to ask of the young firefighter, the current police officer, matched by the city, and ask the post-2004 retirees that have taken this big, fat, outrageously unfair spiking and left our employment, to ask them to give back with a match. The match comes from getting our manning tables up so there's no overtime anymore, from which you get the savings to do this, and tell Standard & Poor's and Moody's that we've fixed our debt problem. It may take 15 to 25 years with that supplemental account, but we did it without raising taxes. And that's the key. You can't raise taxes in a recession. It'd be the worst mistake we could ever make.
All right, we got to move on. And we're getting near the end, so we're needing some short answers. So that's the reason I'm throwing out this question. What do you see as one of the best features of your opponent, Jim?
Oh, come on now.
Well, I'm going to say to what the World Herald asked me. He has an excellent gift of talk.
And that's it?
That's it.
All right, Hal.
You're such a good-looking guy.
It is the 2000, isn't it?
Jim and I are on the Salvation Army board together. We've done a lot of good things in Omaha together. His wife is a terrific gal and has been in public life and served us all ably as well. Mary and I really do enjoy them as a couple and have great respect for their commitment to our city. And I can tell you the thing I like about him is that I don't doubt that for 1 minute.
I got a couple of directed questions here. This is for you, Hal. Among the barbs aimed at you is that you lack diplomacy, that you often fought with the city council when you were mayor before, that you had trouble with working with others. What's your response to
that? Are you speaking about Jim and Mike or about me and...
You.
Me. In all my lifetime of living in our city, I love this city and have a great passion for it. In my law practice, in my relationships with my partners in our 700-lawyer firm, my client base, which is robust. In my work on the Salvation Army Board, Madonna School, my Optimist Club, the Crystal Ray Board in South Omaha, Scouting Board, the only way to get things done is to bring people together. You can't build a Quest Center or a West Dodge Freeway or North Omaha or South Omaha Business Park without being able to bring people together and get things done. So you have to kind of put in perspective the question's source. Wouldn't it be terrible if all of our public policy were decided in a back room, in secret? I know that Everett Dirksen said that two things you don't ever watch being made in public because they're ugly and sausage and laws. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes there's vigorous debate when people on both sides of an issue stand for their principles, and there's an argument, if it's called that, or it's a public debate, or there's some contentiousness, a baseball stadium, for example, or whatever else you might want to look at. It's always going to be there. But I will tell you that at the end of the day, you get these things done and you move forward. So maybe there's some political differences that people can't find how to lay a handle on me some other way, so they try to make it a personality issue. But beyond that, I think you look at my results, and I'm who I am, and you get what you see.
Jim Suttle, a specific question for you. A World Herald editorial complained that during a previous debate before the primary, your responses to questions were overly brief and general. And when the World Herald asked for details on your pledge to reduce taxes, you could not or would not provide such details. Your response?
Well, two questions. First of all, I wish Robin had given the editorial board the rules of that debate, because the rules said we had one-minute answers, and we worked hard, as I know my opponent did, to condense your answers to that timeline. So that was by design to stay within the rules. Second part of your question is a question that gets asked often, will you pledge to reduce taxes? I will not take that pledge, because I take away the flexibility of being able to deal with the problems in front of us. You see, my father said to me when I was a very young man one day, he said, "Son, I hate paying taxes, but I'll gladly pay them if I can see a return on my investment." I never forgot that. It's been something in my professional life and in my political life that I will follow. Are you getting a return on your investment? I submit you are not. And I submit that is why we had the Tea Parties yesterday. And I submit that I will pledge to you that I will give you, as a business person, a return on your investment that you will be proud of.
New question.
Were there two parts to that question?
No. You want to respond?
Well, to the second part,
if
there was. I'm the only candidate in this race, my competitor included, that's ever committed philosophically and in real results to lowering property taxes. I think it's outrageous, as a matter of fact, in a state where valuations increase, you can get promised that your rate's the same. We didn't raise your taxes, but in fact, didn't your taxes go up? Because the same rate applies to higher valuations. Everybody that owns property pays more taxes. Property tax receipts in Omaha are up 43%. That dividend hasn't been given back to the worker or to the producer or the person paying those taxes, but for 6 years when I was mayor, as the valuations went up, we took that mill levy down to give that dividend back to the taxpayers, the men and women who work so hard every day to create the prosperous city that we've got. And I'm the only candidate in this race that's lowered taxes, not raised them.
Jim, you have one more shot at this.
Well, let's go to my favorite source, the World Herald, for the storylines. My opponent is very quick to condemn the loss of the AAA bonding by Moody's. And the points he is making are correct on where we stand and why that happened in the year 2008. But the seeds of that decision were sown in his administration when he did two policy, major policy steps totally unconnected. The first was unilaterally in the room making a mammoth decision, a series of them, to lower your property taxes without the cause and effect of what was going on. And then a second policy decision was to go on a spending spree, particularly as we funded the Quest Center and the hotel and other things here. They could have worked together, but they were not designed together. So we do not have coverage of our bond indebtedness at this date and time. That's why we are lowered from AAA downward. We do not have the coverage in place with how we're going to handle the pension plans. That goes back to that period, too, when my opponent put 38 special pay classifications for the police department annually to draw into. If you were in the traffic unit or the drug unit or whatever unit, these are all defined as part of that base pay. And so this goes back to those very seeds. If we're going to talk about the trauma of losing our AAA, then let's talk about the causal steps that took place over the last 15 years that caused that to happen, and not just leave it hanging here at one point in time.
I'll be real brief.
Hal, you're giving me that look.
Well, so. because you know, I want to get the record straight here. It's real easy to look back and point fingers. I told you that our campaign would be about the future. I guess we're still blaming Bush. We will for the next 4 years. We'll blame Hal Dobb or blame Mike Fahey. I guess somebody might in the future. This is about if you're on deck and you're in the city council where you tax and spend, where you vote for union contracts. I guess I heard that he's against specialty pay for police officers. I mean, I'm not sure what he's trying to say there, but you have to take responsibility when you're on deck and you inherit a mess kit, then you don't just complain about what happened. The Quest Center was financed under the 42.5-cent mill levy, but when the hotel bond came after I left office for $50 million and the spiking in 2004's two contracts came, they had to refinance the riverfront debt to find enough cash to handle overtime and the pension debt and the hotel. So I take no responsibility for sowing any seeds. We were fiscally imbalanced both in our budgets and our pensions, and our taxes were down. And I reject categorically any inference that the seeds were sown during my administration, and the proof is clear.
Okay, I want to move on to another question, and this is one I have not heard debated, and that's annexation. You know, we're all familiar with the battle with Elkhorn, and hopefully there won't be another one of those. But what about your philosophy with regard to annexation? Are you going to be aggressive, Jim Suttle?
Well, I'm a proponent of orderly growth, and annexation is part of that. We do have to come back and take care of some details in the city operations, which is more driven over the last 20 years toward complaint-driven. I have a history as public works director. I've campaigned on gaining the efficiencies in City Hall by using a more managed approach to what we're doing. This will allow us to have the services that we can deliver to the areas that we annex. We must do an annexation that is aggressive this next go around before the 2010 census, because population is an important factor in many of the federal programs and the monies that we would be able to drive into our economy and into our structure to serve people.
Hal Dunn?
Briefly, I know, Jim, that you said in your chamber interview that you were a proponent of aggressive annexation. I am not. I didn't vote for the annexation of Elkhorn. That happened after I left office. But I will say to you that annexation must be done in a balance. You must annex when the debt in the bond costs for the SID resident equals the translation to the mill levy inside the city. Otherwise, if you do it when it's out of balance, you have to subsidize the debt of the SID, and or on the opposite side of that, they get a tax reduction and the city's paying for it. You have to be very careful how you do it. So there's a perfect time to annex, and it's really data-driven by the financial analysis of the contiguity of the borders. So I believe in appropriate, proper annexation when it can be paid for and not have to absorb a $2.9 million for 9-year subsidy to subsidize Elkhorn. The space was too great. It wasn't ripe or mature for annexation. There should have been a standstill agreement until the communities had grown together so the finances would have worked better and not been a burden to the citizens of Omaha.
Well, I've got some more questions here. Unfortunately, we just do not have time for them. We're coming up on the end. We want to do now the closing statements from the candidates. And those are 2 minutes. Hal Dobb, you begin.
I just really don't like to stand behind lecterns because I think they're such barriers to communication. But with the media, I think we're connected to the radio, so I got to kind of hang around the place here. I'm so pleased with the work the League of Women Voters has done to bring Jim and I together twice. I want to thank the League for this public service. And I also want to thank each and every one of you for being here today, and particularly Gary, for the hard work that I know you put into this event each time there's an election in our city. I think it does great service to our community. I'm passionate about Omaha. I care about you and your families in this city. From all the listening we've done and the dialoguing we've done, I've set a vision for our community, which is that 4 years from now we can all look back together and say that we're a safer, cleaner, healthier city, and that we beat the recession. Stretch goals, yes, But this community's got such great potential. Our citizens are kind and friendly, and we reach out in partnerships to our neighbors and to organizations, and our governments work generally well together. So I'm an optimist now. We've got a recession on our hands with flat to declining sales and property tax receipts that are the principal sources of city finance. So it's going to be a real job to watch spending, to set priorities, make sure we don't hang the temporarily closed sign up on the front door of our city. Cities are competitive. We have to continue to work to grow jobs to keep our young people here. And I've offered very specific plans on crime reduction, on economic development, on how to get our city's AAA bond rating back, and programs like Operation Many Hands and a homeowner's improvement tax credit to lower property taxes for better values and cleaning up our neighborhoods. So a lot of new ideas about the future are a part of the campaign that we're trying to deliver to all of our citizens. I want to thank each one of you for your participation in this program. I want to urge you to vote and get your neighbors to vote. And above all, I'll work hard, I'll listen, I won't let you down, and I'd appreciate your vote. Thank you very much.
Jim Suttle, 2 minutes.
On a personal note, my wife was scheduled to be here, former State Senator Deb Suttle. She had a higher calling today. It was taking care of a 9-week-old new grandson. So please forgive her for not being here, but she was called to duty. We have a great city. Get out and vote. The curse in our country is apathy. You can solve that by going to the polls and voting and taking 25 people with you. When I walked into HDR on October 11th, 1971, I got the date right this time, didn't I, folks? Instead of 2071. I walked into a company that was 350 people, seven offices. Chuck Durham was very much involved in the operation, but he gave us freedom to grow. And I grew with that company and became the participatory manager that you see in front of you today that listens with people and works with people. But Chuck had something else that stuck with me all of my life, and that is when we practice the presentation to go out and visit with a client on architecture, engineering, and compete, he always wanted us to close the presentation by asking for the job, and I'm going to do that today. I want to be your mayor. I want to be the 50th mayor of this city. I want to roll up the sleeves, set the agenda that you have set and the other 480,000 people in this city. That is to get on top of this crime and gun violence and gangs, solve it. Get on top of the pension plan, solve it. Get on top of the $1.5 billion sewer mandate, solve it. I want the job. I want to be your mayor. Thank you.
Now, please, a great big round of applause for our candidates debating the issue.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. We've heard a debate between the two candidates for the office of Mayor of Omaha, former Mayor Hal Dobb, and City Councilman Jim Suttle. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, April 16, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The debate was co-sponsored by the Omaha Press Club and the League of Women Voters. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee and to League of Women Voters President Linda Duckworth for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, May 21st at 12 noon. The topic at that time will be the Beatrice Six. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete noon forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening and encouraging you to vote in tomorrow's city election.